Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Like I said, people watch my shows that know me from when I was very young, and they see me riding in the police van going on a drugs raid, and they're like, Aaron, like you've changed. Like,
something to be upside.
Aaron's a fed.
Yeah, exactly. Aaron's a fed. That's what I hear quite a lot.
Thank you so much for joining us again. This is Stop and Search, and we're calling this one Gangbusters, TV reality versus reality TV part 2. And you would have listened to part 1 already, wouldn't you? You've gone and done that? If not, go do it now. And the reason we called it that is, well, we got amazing guests with some incredible backgrounds, very nuanced backgrounds as well. So this is Stop and Search on Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces Network, brought to you by Acast in association with Leap UK. And here we go.
Behind your barricades. Yeah, but how long can I stay? Behind your
So what's going on then? We've got Aaron Roach Bridgman. He is a documentary filmmaker. He has done When Kids Kill, 8 years old and smuggling drugs. He's got an incredible background himself, and he is now an ambassador for some brilliant causes, which comes up in this episode. So make sure you click the links as well, because I'll be scrolling along if you're listening to this on your Cast app. We've also got Danny Brooke, who is a covert specialist, a surveillance specialist. She is also undercover herself at times within her career as a police officer. And now, of course, she's on Channel 4's Hunted as a hunter. So, yeah, don't mess with Danny. We've also got Peter Blexley, who is the chief on Channel 4's Hunted. He's also a former undercover officer. He's got a lot to say because he's a media pundit. And goodness knows Peter's got a lot to say in this, in a good way. Very much in a good way, as are all the guests, because they just, well, as you sit down to edit this, I said this when we put the first episode out, you never know quite what you've got on the night, because you're doing it live, you're making sure it's all going well, looking after the audience. It's only when you sit down to edit that you actually listen to the conversation yourself. And as I've been doing that, I've just been blown away. It's just so many good strings of dialogue going on. So without me rambling, let's get straight on with this. This is part 2. Here we go.
And you've seen every scale, haven't you, Peter, from that level, but also up to Mist, the big. Like the real, what we'd imagine, mafia level bosses. What is it like dealing at that level?
It wasn't imagined. They were mafia. We took out members of the mafia. In fact, it was a mafia-linked organisation that decided to take out a contract on my life, which was discovered via an FBI phone tap in Boston. So we were damaging people at the very highest echelons of organised crime criminality in relation to drugs. And they were invariably very nice people to deal with. And when I worked undercover and I was pretending to be one of them, and they were once again at the higher levels of drug supply and distribution, they were pretty nice people to deal with. I did, of course, spend a lot of time with psychotic, gun-toting, rampant, raving lunatics, which wasn't very pleasant at all. But some of the people that I met at the higher echelons were actually good fun. They had a disregard for the rules and regulations of life by which we run our lives. So they were inherently rebellious, they were fun, they liked to drink, and they were fun. All the more reason why I would like to deny them the opportunity of their ill-gotten gains. They don't deserve it. The 14-year-olds you talk about, the 16-year-olds you talk about, let's deny them that opportunity. Let's cut off that revenue stream, and I bring you back to my PPA, price, purity, availability. If the regulated world beats the criminals on all of that, they'll have nowhere to go. They will have nowhere to beat you on price or purity or availability. It'll have to be a 24/7 operation, but it's all doable.
And your book, The Gangbuster, it goes into some really outlandish ways that people got drugs in this country. One of them being rewelding JCBs and heavy good vehicles like that.
Yeah, these people were very well resourced, so they could fly out to South America, to obviously all the source countries. And I'm glad you've mentioned source countries, because I've got my thoughts on that. I have thoughts on everything, as you know. And they would go out there and they would go to these source countries and they would come up with very inventive ways in which to smuggle the drugs into the UK. One of which was those big arms that extend out the front of JCBs. They went to the manufacturer, cut them open, stuff them with drugs, weld them back again. Nobody will ever know. We did. But once again, hailed as a glittering success. Go to the commissioner's office and have a cucumber sandwich and be told how brilliant you were. Right, and then go back out there and do it all the following day because somebody else is doing it now. It was such a waste of time.
See, I never get tired of that. The fact that you got people like you and Danny that and all the people in Leap, like Neil Woods, I'm sure you know, that have been on the front lines, and yet you still have got these positions of, it was just futile. Did it ever feel like that, Danny, of just like, I just want to sign, just go home and forget this happened?
Not at the time, because you're being told you're the greatest thing that's ever happened. So you,
does it work like that?
Great. You walk away and you've got that product and you're like, this is amazing. I'm so shit hot at this. And then you, like Blake said, you get called up to the commissioner's office, so you're really good. And then your mum and dad get invited to the Tower of London and you get your certificate and you get your tunic out. So you're brilliant. And then, like Blake said, the next day you're back to square one and doing it all again. And you're like, well, that was a complete waste of my time. And then the pressure's on every time because now you're really pushing because you want to get as good as a result again because you want another sandwich. And it's just a vicious, vicious circle. If you look at the arrest figures, I don't know what they are, but I'm quite certain, having been involved in it, the people on the ground, the young people that are getting caught and prosecuted will far outweigh those at the top that are getting done. These people at the top are businessmen. They're greedy and they will do whatever they've got to do to protect themselves, but no, they don't care about anyone else. And that's something I used to see. I mean, I didn't have to thankfully have to go to the top dog very often. I was normally just on the arm of someone. That's how good I was. Like Blake said, they're fun, they're smart. You would never ever know in a million years if they were sitting in this room now, yeah, they're a drug dealer, unless you was obviously working on them. And it's just a really sad state of affairs, really.
I'm really interested to know what it takes to be that skilled in doing that job as well, because I can't imagine what went into the work that you did. How
skills as in the
in
dealers.
What you do is in covert operations and surveillance and everything like that. It's just mind-blowing. You know, to me, it's Orwellian, just the levels of work that needs to go into that to actually get any kind of lead into what's going on.
She's a remarkable liar.
That's going to be one of those video quotes.
Oh, God, I'm never going to let that down. I think, how do I come back from that? I think a lot of it was, I was young, as I said, when I joined. So to be told straight away, you're really good. You always want that, don't you? Of course, everyone wants to be told they're really good. And you push yourself. And I am quite an adrenaline junkie. So, and I like to think that I can push my boundaries quite a lot. I don't think there's any particular skill. I think it's just I can talk a lot.
It is. It's all about lying. Don't believe a word that Danny says, right? Okay. Yeah, it's all about lying. I was a professional liar for more than a decade, and I was very, very good at it. As long as there is dishonesty and greed within the human race, there'll always be an avenue for undercover cops to exploit that.
And that seems, does seem to be a continuity theme between all the undercovers that I know, is adrenaline. You all seem to be really going for that buzz of in the work. Is that true? Does that come with it?
110%.
Would you say that, Peter, as well?
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, yeah. It's a high-octane, testosterone-fueled, adrenaline-pumping kind of life.
So is it what we see in the films, is what I'm getting at, like Starsky and Hutch?
You're told straight away that you're part of the elite, so you feel like the best thing ever, don't you? So if you're doing things like going to buy drugs in a nightclub, like, and getting paid for it...
And this is the feedback we've got when we advertise this event, is being themed loosely around gangs, is we got quite a lot of people tweeting us going, the police are one of the biggest gangs out there, which is something that I'd imagine was touched upon in your films and the people that you spoke to, Aaron, is that there are going to be a lot of people that do see the police as a gang, and that the same level of I don't know, violence and what goes with it. Is, from your position, would you agree that there are people that are being... not persecute. Well, yeah, you could use the word persecute, perhaps, within this. But is there a social persecution that goes with this?
Yeah, the police and the force is seen as the enemy. Growing up, that's how I saw them as well. Growing up where I grew up in Northwest London, it was just, it's like an inherent just hate, even before anything happened. Excuse me. Even before anything had happened between any of the people who I was associated with and the police, as soon as you see them, it's a straight hateful vibe towards them. And that's something that really hasn't changed. Like I said, people watch my shows that know me from when I was very young, and they see me riding in the police van going on a drugs raid, and they're like, Aaron, like, you've changed. Like,
gone to the upside.
Aaron's a fed.
Yeah, exactly. Aaron's a fed. That's what I hear quite a lot. And it's like, you know, they joke about it. They joke about with it, but there really is that sentiment of, how could you do that kind of thing? How do you do it? And I think a relationship that we really need to work on is that relationship between the force and between certain communities. Because in many cases, like I say, that even before there's any reason to be hateful towards the police, that it already is there. And yes, people do call them the biggest gang. People do believe that the police are a gang. Like, even myself, like, growing up, you know, we were accosted by CIDs, or as we call them, SIDs, when we were younger. Like, and you know, they would run through our pockets and find our weed and throw it on the floor and step on it in front of us and stuff like that. You know what I mean? And sometimes it got worse. Some people were thrown to the floor and whatever else. But these are individual incidents, and I've met a lot of different people from the force, and I've had more pleasant interactions than I've had those type of interactions. But it's just about having conversations. But we don't get a chance to have those conversations between, like, say, the force and certain communities. And whenever there is an opportunity, it tends to turn into like an argument or like shouting fest. And you know, don't treat. You know what I mean? It's like we need to have proper conversations and start to really create a relationship there where I feel like that might take away some of that animosity. What do you think, Peter?
Imagine a world where the police weren't enforcing a 1971 Misuse of Drugs Act. Imagine where the drugs were regulated and can be purchased from an outlet in your high street. Imagine what different kind of work the police could then do.
It's true.
I am sure, if they were let off the leash and they were free to say what they really thought, apart from retired likes of the mighty Neil and Danny and myself, I am convinced that so many who are currently serving would say, we really don't want to be doing with this stuff. Criminality has moved on. So much crime has moved online, which is going to need vast resources to tackle it. And all that kind of thing. They've got murders. They've got child sexual exploitation. They've got enough on their plate. They probably really don't want to be dealing with a 14-year-old who's got a £10 bag in his pocket.
We're going to be going for questions fairly soon, so make sure you get some queued up, because there's always been that nightmare moment I've had once since we've been doing these events where I go, right, questions, and then everybody's deadly silent, and then you see a tumbleweed go across there. So make sure, please, even if it's something stupid like favourite colour or book or something, please have a question.
Just quickly going back to what you said about the gang side of things, I'm not badly mouthing the officers that arrested me. I was on a covert op and got arrested for possession with intent to supply because I just scored. and they raided the pub and hadn't done the checks to see if there was a covert op running, and there was, and I was in there. Everyone else in the pub threw it in the air, so it looked like it was snowing apart from me, because mine was evidence and I was scared. And they arrested me, and they high-fived each other on the way out. Now, there was a pub full of people. This was a planned operation, and they got one arrest. And they were high-fiving. And the one person they arrested was me, so it didn't count. But that was a complete gang. Yes, we got one. It's been a result, because we've got her, and it's Peewit, so it's really good. And it's only when, obviously, I got back to the station and was strip-searched, and they found my wire, they were like, shit. But I did get a case of champagne out of the sergeant, because she was a bit rough.
I think that's one of the best stories we had. Round of applause, man.
But there is some truth in that, though, because like I remember as well, like a lot of situations where there will be officers that would even tell certain members of the area that I was from, all right, we're going to get you, though. There was all that kind of like, it was almost like this, it was almost like the same kind of conflict you would have between, I guess, two opposing areas. There was always that element with a lot, oh, well, now we're going to get you, though. Yeah, you keep laughing, but we'll get you, like, we're on you. And there was like a lot of threats made by those members of the force who were known to the area, because they would patrol our areas regularly, so they know who everybody was. And there was that element of kind of like a, almost like a competition. All right, we haven't found anything on you this time, but we will find something on you next time, and we're going to get you. And that was something that almost created like a cat and mouse thing. It's like, okay, we're going to try and avoid them at any chance that we can. And then also it creates that dynamic of, well, they're all like that. We have to avoid all of them because they're all out to get us, which isn't always the case. In some cases, there's been situations that I've been where the police could have helped us. Like, I've nearly lost my life on numerous occasions, like just growing up and being involved in certain crazy situations. And there's times when maybe the police could have really have been of assistance, but you never called them. You never called the police. Never.
See, that's fascinating, isn't it? The fact that you can't rely on that level of protection that we're all supposed to be afforded because of where your social place is. That's just, and then this is something that you've touched upon as well, Peter, the competitive nature of drug laws. It goes on in the force as well, doesn't it? You've got customs that are competitive with the police force. This is something you touch upon in Gangbusters.
I'm going to be like a politician now and completely ignore your question. Right? How long is Q&A?
It depends on these lot.
Right, okay. Because before we leave this evening, I would just really, really like to give my brief kind of snapshot as to how the regulated world, the drug-regulated world, would work, if I may. It will require intergovernmental agreements, of course, okay? We're not a producer country. Well, we didn't used to be, but we are now, aren't we? Because so many people grow cannabis in their lofts, wheresoever they grow it. And, of course, companies grow it and export it. Right. So we can have artificial environments within which to grow cannabis. Right. But our climate isn't suited to growing the coca leaf, from which, of course, cocaine is made. It's not conducive to growing opium poppies, from which heroin is derived. So we are going to need to have intergovernmental arrangements with those countries. A kilo of cocaine in a factory in the jungle of Bolivia costs 375 quid at the gate, right, when you buy it. By the time it gets to the UK, there'll be better informed people here than me, I think it's 25, 30 grand, right? Because at every stage of the transportation process, people add a levy for the risk they take and the resources they have to apply. So what do? We go to Bolivia, Colombia, Venezuela, Peru, and we buy the coca leaves from the farmers in a fair trade kind of arrangement, government to government. The government will subcontract it out, obviously, to some kind of enormous kind of conglomerate medical kind of GSK or somebody similar, right? Okay, we'll have to deal with it. It's a price we'll have to pay for regulation. So then what happens is dried coca leaves, for which we've paid a fair trade price at the farm gate, which has lifted that Peruvian, Bolivian, Colombian farmer out of poverty so that his children can get an education. Those dried coca leaves are then shipped to the UK. Do we need customs boats to shadow them? Do we need the Royal Navy to shadow those boats? No, because essentially they're virtually worthless coca leaves, right? There'll be no point in high treason on the seas for a tanker load of coca leaves. It doesn't equate to that much in value. If it does, we'll put armed guards on the boats in any event. There'll still be lots of money left, profit to be made. So then those coca leaves get transported to the UK. They then go to a production plant, which is far more regulated, licensed, and I would like to think a cleaner type of operation than it is out in the hidden jungles of South America. So that's my vision for that kind of process. It then goes into the factories where the cocaine is made, and it then gets sold through the licensed retail outlets. Same for the heroin. Pills, right? They're not made in some kind of unofficial lab. They are made in properly regulated, licensed laboratories where the content of them is strictly regulated. And so then when you go and buy it on a Friday or a Saturday night and you're going to go clubbing with however many pills you want to buy, you know what's in it. You get the advice on how to take it. It is shown to the medics as you go into the nightclub. They know what's being consumed. It's a safer, safer world. These countless, unnecessary teenage deaths through ignorance of what they're taking will largely become a thing of the past. Thanks for letting me say that.
Just quickly, what Blix said there about the what it's cut with. Like when you get the lab results back and you see what's actually the content of these drugs, it's actually horrific what people are putting in their bodies. And I think that, I mean, that's a whole other subject anyway. We could be here for 3 days talking about that. But it's really, really, like, people just don't understand the dangers of it. Like, it's terrible, isn't it? It used to be that it'd be cut with a little bit of hay fever tablet, but now you're getting, like, actual chemicals in there that are more harmful than the original drug. So that's just another little thing to take into consideration.
This is something that we're going to be addressing because we're friends with The Loop that do the drug testing, and we're setting up a podcast with them to make sure we have this discussion, because you're absolutely right. Some of the cutting agents are ridiculous. And also, the something you touched upon, Peter, as well, the fair trade aspect of this. This is something we touched upon in a previous podcast here with Tom Wainwright from The Economist, where we did narconomics. So what's going on at farm level and how it affects us here and the overlaps and everything like that. So a quick few boasts and a quick few sort of plugs there. But have we got questions? Is there going to be a hand in the air, please? Yes, we got 2, 3. Well done. Right, let's start at the back and work forward. Right, can I ask your name as well?
My name is Keith, and this is to Peter, but I'd like to everyone to perhaps chip in. You've obviously got a strong vision of the future and the way police's priorities could be better, you know, put in better places if they didn't have to enforce the 1971 Misuse of Drugs Act. What would be your vision for in a kind of utopian world? Where would you like to see police priorities, are those freed up police priorities put, you know, is it sort of going back to grassroots, are there other areas where you think the police could change the way they work as an agency and enforce? And that's obviously to your views, to all of you as well.
Great question, Keith. So many criminals are now moving online. Okay, those that are put out of a job by the regulation of drugs will invariably move online. There is a far greater amount of crime committed there now than there ever was. So there will be a need for resources to be deployed there. I think it won't quite be a utopia, but it'll be a lot better than what we've got. And consequently, I would like to see the reinvention of things which we've lost, which is neighbourhood policing, about which I'm passionate, and sadly resources have been stripped away from that in recent years. So online, neighbourhood policing, and then into the crimes that we know more about that we previously didn't, like child sexual exploitation, human trafficking, etc.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
You got a view, Danny, because you seem to be nodding your head.
Like a dog. I completely agree. Everything's moving online, including drug dealing. There's a really good documentary where a guy was basically on the dark net and he was selling these drugs. Or he had like a pool of people. So it was the whole of the US. But they would go to him. He would then deploy whoever was nearest to the person requiring the drugs. And he just got greedy. It was a very clever plan he had. He was a great businessman, an academic, just got greedy. And that's the only reason he got caught. So we need more officers to become tech savvy and cyber savvy. Because we're not, none of us. We're just really good at using our own intelligence systems. And we don't actually look outside of that. That, and like Blex said, I think we have a huge problem with like paedophilia and child sex offences. And having worked on that quite a lot in my career, I think we really need to start looking at that. And actually the other day I saw a guy got a suspended sentence for, which just baffles me, for indecent images of children. Like, what is going on? But they'll put someone in prison who's been caught with a little tiny bag of heroin and they'll chuck them in for a couple of months, like, and they'll keep them on remand, so that's keep like clogging up the court system, and we'll put them away for a month because they've had a little bit of personal, but he gets a suspended sentence. Like, I might be wrong, but I don't think so.
Aaron, as well, do you think that community policing can have a better effect on the way that the relationships between the police and you know, all sorts of vulnerable demographics are policed?
I want to say yes.
You want to?
I want to say yes, but I don't know. I don't know. I'm still. I don't know.
What if we took drugs out of the equation? How would that alter the relationship between the popo and the youth?
Had the word popo.
Just to show how hip and down with the kids I am, right?
Do you know what? I'm still undecided. Like, I see there's a lot of plausibility and a lot of feasibility in the regulating of drugs, but I'm not sure. I'm not 100% sold on whether it will be a great enough deterrent to stop what we see happening in terms of the criminality and violence that's associated within certain communities. I'm not 100% sold on it yet. I think maybe I need to see something of more of a model of possibility of what it would look like before I could find complete agreement with it. But I do definitely see feasibility and plausibility in what you're saying in terms of doing it. It's hard. I think it's of pivotal importance that we do have more of a relation or more of a relationship between policing and these communities that have a lot of these issues. But how to go about it is still something that plagues me in terms of coming up with a proper solution or a viable solution to achieving that.
It's so transgressional, isn't it? It's still we've yet to reach that point, so we need to discuss that. I think we had a question over here, didn't we?
Hi, my name's Kobe. The chap behind me kind of asked my question, so I had to quickly come up with a second one. That's all right. So it's not going to be Theresa May, because she's there at the dispatches kind of saying we need to up the war on drugs. If there was someone in power in politics who was forward-thinking, what would it take? What stopping them actually pulling the trigger and saying let's legalize these things? And then what would be the benefit of the the additional tax income that? And this is to everyone, I guess.
May I?
Of course you can.
What is stopping?
How can I stop you?
What is stopping that politician is uninformed public opinion, which is so entrenched and is against regulation because it's afraid of it and it hasn't been properly informed and hasn't worked out the arguments. As for the billions of pounds that will be raised through regulated drug sale, and I'm talking billions upon billions of pounds, in my world, a lot of that will be spent on primary school education to educate children about drugs. Because whilst they will become more available to them, I would still like them to take them less. So primary school education. My youngest, who are 15 and 16, had smoking educated out of them in primary school. We can do the same with drugs. I'm convinced of that. Because the numbers in our prisons will decrease, I think there will then be enough money and resources to make prison not just a place of punishment, but a place of what it really should be, which is rehabilitation. So we can rehabilitate people. We can educate them. We can train them both vocationally, for example, so they leave there with a trade. We are going to have a generation denied the opportunity to become drug dealers. They will need to be led down a different path. So that's where my money will go, education, training, etc.
And Danny and Aaron, what do you think the chances are at political level and social level of reform, and what is holding it back? We always say that we're probably going to go for a bottom-up approach here, that we're going to have to set the scene, which is why we do things like this, to get people involved before it trickles to politicians. Do you agree with that? Do you think we can go for a bottom-up, or do you think top-down is actually possible?
If I'm honest, I don't know. The way things are going at the minute across the UK, I don't actually know. I think you're right, though. I think it will... My guess would be it would go that way, which is quite sad. But like Bleck said, it will happen. It's just when and how. And I don't have the answers to that.
Aaron, what do you think the mood is amongst where you frequent? Do you think that there is going to be a mood to actually take this by the horns and go, right, we need to sort this out now?
What do you mean, elaborate? What do you mean, mate?
Do you think that the conversations are taking part right now, that the voters of tomorrow are going to start having more of an influence on the policies that are affecting them?
Definitely. I'm an ambassador for a youth platform that connects younger people with politics. And some of these kids are very, very well informed, very, very politically engaged as well. And I think, you know, they're fighting to get the vote lower as well. They really want to be involved in shaping their futures, especially after seeing what happened with Brexit, where a lot of people feel like a decision has been made that's going to affect their lives by people who may not live through the time that it will be in effect. There's a lot of them that feel frustrated by that. I feel like, yes, it is. I've even had conversations. There's a lot of young people that think that it will get regulated. A lot of young people feel that the drug trade will be regulated and will become legalized. A lot of them see it as something that is actually going to happen. It's just a matter of when. So, yeah, definitely. It is something that not all, but some of the younger generation that I've interacted with are very much in the forefront of having conversations about and actually concerned about, yeah.
That SBTV that you were speaking about?
No, it's they're called Shout Out UK. Cool. And they're like the leading platform in the UK for connecting younger people with politics.
I'll link that all in so that it scrolls up at the bottom.
That's
of the
cool.
podcast.
Cool.
So in addition to my previous question, how much do you think politicians feel they're beholden to try and get re-elected? How much of that is a barrier to them making important reform changes that could affect drugs? And I guess prostitution could be something that could be seen in the same kind of light of how to regulate things properly.
If you represent a constituency where your majority feel that they are not affected by drugs because they live in the comfort of their suburbia, their picturesque countryside, the comfort of their semi-detached lives, and they feel that drugs don't affect them, then you are not going to do something which is going to terrify your majority and suddenly stand up and say, we need reform. But maybe in a generation's time, as those lives untouched by drugs increasingly become touched by drugs, then maybe, just maybe, we will start to see a groundswell of opinion for change. Indeed.
Very true. Yeah, Portugal's a good example, bottom up. It was, you know, the social movements took the ball by the horns and sorted it out. Have we got one more question? You know, I've over here, Penny. How's it going?
Okay. Hello, I'm Penny Fitzlion. I have multiple sclerosis. I, for 3 years, from the doctors, was getting different opiates. To say they stole a lot and made me more incapable is an understatement. I have discovered cannabis makes it so I can move around. I can talk without slurring. The whole of the medical cannabis market includes the recreational users and growers. Without them, I wouldn't be able to do anything. Yet they're tarred with the same brush. Why? When they are doing so much good.
Because of a piece of legislation that was enacted in 1971, the same year that much-lauded former President of the United States, Richard Nixon, declared drugs public enemy number one. And so the war on drugs began.
And this goes back to a point I made about the grey markets, how not everybody that sells drugs is this big villain that we think them to be, is there? I mean, you've had experience with that, Aaron, in your films, is that you've met fairly normal people that do this as a matter of course to actually make ends meet.
Yeah, one of them even said to me that his main goal was to go to university and study. Yeah. And I remember there was a moment when we were filming where everybody kind of in the rooms kind of went, like, was kind of thrown by that. But it just shows you it's all different types of people. Some people do it, as you say, to subsidize whatever they're making in a job. Some people are doing it with a certain aim in mind. There's all different types of people that are doing it. And yeah, I am kind of with you, Peter. I am kind of with you. I kind of do see where a fully regulated drug industry could actually work. But I guess it's the proof is in the pudding. I've seen it in action will be the biggest proof, I guess. The biggest proof of whether it will work or not. I am kind of getting more with you, though, Peter, as the night goes on. I'm not going to lie. You are bringing me in a little bit.
And it's only 25 past eight.
So if you noticed, Aaron's actually wearing the Leap badge there, which looks absolutely... I think it's never looked better, that badge. Honestly, it hasn't. So we're going to have a quick wrap-up now. So a closing sentence from each one of you on where do you think we're going with this? Where do you think what's new in your world as well, and projects as well? Just have a closing sentiment. We'll start with Peter. Yeah, go for it.
drug law reform is not only necessary, it's inevitable. To see the arms go up like I did tonight was an uplifting moment that will stay long in my memory. Thank you for coming here this evening. It's been a privilege to be able to speak to you. I hope we meet again.
Round of applause for Peter. And now I put Danny and Aaron on the spot. It's like, who's
well, I was just going to say that, and Peter stole it from me. but no, like Peter said, when it does happen, what a great achievement. And people like yourself can actually not have to worry about having to go and buy some cannabis and worry about getting arrested for it.
And Aaron, where do you think we're going with this?
Do you know what? My main concern is just the lessening of the violence and the criminality. In the work that I'm doing and the work that I've done previously, even TV, it's like my main concern and my main area of work has been working with young people. And I'm just seeing way too many deaths and murders, and it's getting younger and younger and younger. So, Peter, I am kind of with you. And I hope that with that coming, and I think it will come into place, to be honest. I think it will become actioned. And I just hope that if it does, it really does try to, you know, well, not try to, I hope it really does affect the level of criminality and violence that we're seeing, because too many young people are dying. Too many people in general are being murdered. And it's just something that I just don't want to see anymore. And yeah, thank you so much for coming and listening to me. Thank you for having me as well. I appreciate it.
But please do give a massive round of applause for our guest tonight. Please give it up for these guys.
Thank you so much, Peter. Thank you so much, Danny and Aaron. And a special thank you as well to Kobe, who is at the end there asking a question. Kobe's a friend of ours. He does the podcast Flix Watcher, which I've actually been on. And also he does Wire Strips, which is all about The Wire. So go and listen to those. And now I've got to do the social media roll call, which I'm always rubbish at. So if you could find us at ukleap.org on our website, at UKLeap on Twitter, at UKLeap on Instagram, and Facebook at ukleap.org, or whatever it is. Yeah, something like that. And also, one of me, you know the score by now, I've got to do the thank yous. Thank you so much to John Harris at Distraction Pieces Network. Go listen to his podcast, The Dream Factory. It is magnificent. And, spoiler alert, I might be on it soon. Thank you so much to John, our the UK social media worker. Without him, well, you wouldn't get to hear about us because, yeah, he does all the magic stuff. Thank you so much. My name is Ad for the artwork you do for us. Without you, we wouldn't look half as pretty. Thank you so much to all the Distraction Pieces Network. Go listen to them. They're all fantastic chart toppers and award winning. And thank you so much, of course, to Scroobius Pip, because without him, we wouldn't be doing this. And while I'm on the subject, make sure you keep an eye out for Pod Bible, a new podcast magazine which is out, which I've got a small, very small hand in. I'm going to be covering social causes, podcasts with a social conscience, because, as you know from this podcast, it's not all about talking to celebrity guests and having a good old laugh and a chat. Podcasts can actually widen out conversations. They can make sure that we're having these difficult chats and also just inspirational ones as well, because goodness knows there's a lot of that out there. So please keep an eye open for Pod Bible. It's going to be a print magazine and also digital, I believe. I'll keep you updated. Right. On that note, on that ramble, there's bound to be people I've forgotten. Oh, yes, there is. Our producers, Nikki and Tristan. I'll do it every time, don't I? Thank you so much to them. Without them, we wouldn't have a podcast. Right, that's definitely it. I'm off now. Right, quick, bye. Behind your barricades. Yeah, but how long can I stay? Behind your barricades. Where true values seldom stray.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.